Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gays and grannies to this Sunday afternoon is a big puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. Thanks for joining in, and we are a viewer-supported station, guys, so if you like what's going on here over at People's Internet and Shake and Wake, please push the donate button. They much appreciate the help. I'm going to touch on a subject today that I haven't touched on for a while. We all hear about it, and it's a very, very controversial subject still in our communities today. That is the fluoridation of water. And I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Bob. Now, if that's his real name, full real name, I'm not quite sure. But Dr. Bob is the founder of Safe Water for Calgary and has been in the fluoride battle for many years. And I'm also joined by Roger Landry, who I consider to be a very, very well-versed individual on the subject of fluoridation. Something that pisses all off to the point of pissed off. And that was expressed just before we hit the air, so I thought I'd share that with you guys. I'm also seeming to be losing my voice for some reason today, so bear with me. Dr. Bob, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, and then Roger, I'll pass it to you, and we'll get into a conversation about this great practice of fluoridating our water to stop tooth decay. Go ahead. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bob.
Thank you. As you mentioned, Dr. Bob Dixon is my name. I'm a family physician from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I first voted for water fluoridation in favor of it in 1998 in the last plebiscite in Calgary. And then friends and colleagues challenged me to look at the literature, which I did. And I found, after looking thoroughly through all the pro and anti-fluoride literature, that this was an absolute scam. It was something that we should not be foisting on any of our citizens or patients or clients. And so I took it on myself to do something about it. I then contacted Dr. Jim Beck, who was one of my profs at the University of Calgary Medical School. And he, like me, once he looked at the literature, agreed that we definitely had to do something about it. He thought it would take maybe a handful of months to get the decision reversed, because at that time we were fluoridated in Calgary. And it actually took us 12 years of very hard work and diligence to get the decision overturned and get the fluoride taps turned off here in Calgary.
Hmm. That was in 2011, I believe?
That's correct. We got them turned off by a decision in January of 2011, and they actually turned the taps off in May of 2011.
Well, the fact that this practice is still going on in our society, to me, is absolutely barbaric. I'm going to let Roger chime in for a minute, but when we start force fluoridating or force medicating public and calling it an energy to fight tooth disease, boy, I'll tell you, the research I've done in the last 3 or 4 years on fluoride, there is just no reason in my world that we should be adding it to our water. Fluoride does have an effect when it's topically applied to teeth. Everybody will admit that. But ingesting it through our body, I think it goes into our GI tract and through all kinds of neat organs. It has an amazing effect on the pineal gland and our IQ levels and blah, blah, blah. Roger, welcome to the show. And what do you think about fluoride?
Well, as you told everyone, or actually you didn't,
I am the founder of the Liberty Beacon Project, and we pride ourselves in the fact that we will tell you the truth, which isn't very popular today. Matter of fact, it scares most people, and we term them sheeple in the States. They tend to hide from the truth. It doesn't matter. Somebody has to keep telling it. I will tell it, okay? Let's talk about a byproduct of something like aluminum processing, a byproduct that is so toxic that it costs the companies about $6,000 a ton to properly dispose of it. Or they could sell it to a municipal water company for $1,000 a ton and have a $7,000 profit instead of losing $6,000 to have this processed properly as toxic waste. They're going to put it in our water, and they're going to make $1,000 on it. Okay, anybody who thinks that's just a little bit too simplistic, it's not. This is a fact, okay? And let me get through one more thing, and then, well, actually, I'll save this for the conversation, because I'm very, very interested in listening to what Doc Bob has to say. I really am.
Me too.
Okay, just one small thing I'd like to mention there, Roger, is that most of the hydrofluorosilicic acid, which is scrubbed out of the waste industry stacks, is actually from the fertilizer industry. It used to be more from the aluminum industry, and now just a small amount comes from them, and the majority comes from the fertilizer industry. But regardless, it is a toxic waste product. It's one of the most toxic elements on our planet.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, you're exactly right. These people make money. Putting it at basically disposing of it in our human bodies rather than disposing of it properly in a waste treatment plant.
We'll wait until we get into that because, yeah, I came with some big facts. Not to belittle what you do because you just corrected me, and I appreciate that. That's why I'm here. Okay, we will share things, but Barry will tell you I have a reputation for this. If I haven't grabbed your attention, you're going to go away from this. Your memory, maybe 20% of what is said here by maybe 10% of the people will be remembered. But if you put some really seriously damaging facts in front of people and you can back it up, you've got a much higher retention rate. So between the two of us, I'm hoping that's exactly what we can do. And I think that's what Barry intended.
Yeah, I did. You know, I did actually myself study the chronological history of fluoride, found out the group of doctors or the dentists that actually introduced it to society, how it was brought forward. And then I cross-referenced those doctors, and lo and behold, you find out that they had direct links to the chemical companies, like Rogers was saying, that had to pay up to $6,000 a ton to dispose of this toxic chemicals. Weren't allowed to dump it in normal landfill sites, had to be handled and dumped in special containment areas, blah, blah, blah. Well, these guys were actually involved in these chemical companies that brought this forward to the public. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to put the pieces together. Go ahead, gentlemen, Dr. Bob.
Okay, so one thing I might mention to the folks who are listening, if they want to get more up to speed on this, is that there's two excellent books that I'd recommend, and the first one is called The Fluoride Deception, and that's by Christopher Bryson, who is an investigative journalist, and he did a superb job. I believe that was published in 2003 or 4, and that is just an excellent book that outlines the exact things you were just talking about, Barry, the whole chronology and the whole history of how this came about.
Right.
And an amazing story. Christopher has been demeaned in the national press here in Canada, as I have as well. We've been called Ten Hatters and pseudoscientists and anti-science and all sorts of things, fabricators of information. But Christopher researched for a long, long time to write the book, The Fluoride Deception. And it reads almost like a spy novel.
It's a great book. The
deceptions all came through. Thanks. Yeah, I agree, Roger. And the second one is one I'm quite biased about. I think it's the best book ever written on fluoride ever on our planet. And it's called The Case Against Fluoride. And that's written by my mentor, Dr. James Beck from the University of Calgary, who's originally from Texas. And Jim is a PhD and an MD, and it's also co-written and co-authored by Dr. Paul Connett, who's a PhD chemist who leads the Fluoride Action Network in the U.S. out of New Jersey. And the other co-author, the third person, is Dr. McLean, and he's from the UK with a PhD as well. So this book is absolutely totally documented with all kinds of science, about 800 scientific annotations, and it again goes through the history. And it's a book you can pick up and read, you know, a chapter here and a chapter there, because all the chapters are in different parts of this fluoride and fluoridation story.
Say, Barry, you have a question in chat for Dr. Bob.
Okay, I was just talking to Steve Danks here. He's having trouble getting people into the show right now. Steve, I'll go right there right now. Hang on. I'll ask that question in a minute.
All right, I got 2 points here that I need to get through before I have to go bye-bye, in which case you and the doctor can have the rest of the show uninterrupted or unhindered by my mouth. And anybody who knows Barry and me knows exactly what I'm talking about. But these 2 points that I want to get through, that I need people, and doctor, I'm sure you think or you believe we need people to understand, is what are the repercussions of having this in your water or in your toothpaste or in actually other over-the-counter products that are utilized? So what are they? Let's put it into perspective, okay? You would have to drink as little as, say, about a 12-ounce glass of water to get the same amount of fluoride that you would get from
swallowing a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. Now, why did I just say that? I'm going to put that into further perspective. There is no limit on the amount of water you are encouraged to drink daily. Many doctors and health specialists are saying stuff like, hey, 6 to 8, 10 to 12 ounce glasses of water a day. That makes sense. I'm not saying it doesn't. But if you're drinking fluoride water, all right, if you swallow that pea-sized bit of fluoridated toothpaste, you are encouraged right on the product to call safety control, call poison control. All right, I started this off by saying you would have to drink one 12-ounce glass of water. It's actually slightly less to get as much as you get in that pea-sized glass. Amount of toothpaste. Yet for the toothpaste, you are encouraged to call poison control, but the doctor tells you to drink 10 to 12 12-ounce glasses of water a day, each one containing the same amount of fluoride. Where's the sanity in that, Dr. Bob? And then I'll get to my last point, and then I'll shut up.
There certainly is no sanity in that, drinking that much fluoride. And that's one of the things that the pro fluoridationists often say, oh, you could drink 10 or 12 swimming pools worth of fluoridated water and it wouldn't affect you. Well, obviously, they're not reading the labels on the toothpaste and they're not calculating dose or dosage, which is one of my biggest complaints, too. When we deliver water or medication via public water, there's no control of dose or dosage. And no matter what the concentration, so they can have the concentration of 1.2 parts per million, or they've now lowered it to 1 part per million, and now to 0.7 parts per million. In almost all places in North America, it's either 0.8 or 0.7 parts per million is the concentration. But anybody that's in medicine, and some people that aren't, realize that dose and dosage are very different than concentration. So just to give a quick example there, if, say, a 100-pound woman who was running marathons drank, say, 10 glasses of water a day, and then a 200-pound person that was sedentary only drank one glass of water a day, that person, that 100-pound person, would be getting 10 times the dose because she's drinking 10 times the amount of water with fluoride in it. But she's getting double that because she's half the weight. So her dosage is actually going to be 20 times the amount, and possibly even more if this person is heavier.
I agree. And Barry, did you want to slip that question in? Because I got one more point, and I think.
Well, I wanted to bring up one point that when I was fighting fluoride here, and I have been fighting the city of Terrace here on fluoride for years now. I asked one of the gentlemen up at the University of Northern British Columbia to kind of calculate roughly how much fluoride was being absorbed into the body if we sat in a bathtub full of fluoridated water for half an hour. Of course, we know the skin is a huge organism that absorbs anything that touches it and goes into your body. And the numbers he gave me absolutely blew my mind. We have guidelines for the safe levels, apparently, of fluoride that we can consume every day without having an effect. By sitting in a bathtub of fluoridated water for 1.5 hours, the number he gave me is we were absorbing 600 times the daily recommended dose. Does that make sense to you, gentlemen? That's one of the things I looked into when I was presenting this information to city council. Our city council in here is running by Nazis. I mean, they're working for the government of British Columbia. Our mayor is a member of the Council of Mayors of British Columbia, and she's being mandated by the government to exactly what to do. And we have fought her. We had a petition with 700 signatures on it, and they still refuse to give us a referendum on it. So we're basically living in Nazi terrace here. Go ahead, gentlemen.
I don't know if it's actually Nazi because actually, when you consider the big business or the huge corporate tie-in, that's pretty much Nazi. Let me get through this last point.
I'm calling a spade a spade.
No, you are.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let me get through this last point, and then I apologize, gentlemen, but I'm going to have to duck out. I'm going to start off with a quote from a gentleman. His name is Dr. Dean Burke. He is a PhD, and he spent 34 years working for the National Cancer Institute. And I believe, and I might be paraphrasing here, in point of fact, fluoride causes more human cancer death and causes it faster than any other chemical. Now, this is a reputed PhD researcher who worked for the National Cancer Institute for 34 years. Here's what I'm leading up to.
Okay. And Barry, you've heard this before, and your audience has heard part of this before. Okay. Let's talk about the aluminum in vaccines. Let's talk about the aluminum that falls in the air because of the, I don't know, millions of metric tons of nano-sized particles of aluminum they spray in the upper atmosphere to reflect sunlight. They told us they do that. Okay. You breathe that. It eventually falls down. Okay. So you have all of these heavy metals in both what we consume, whether it's underarm deodorant, whether it's vaccines, whether it's the water we're drinking. But we have this miracle. It's called a blood-brain barrier. And as adults, it is basically a traffic cop that tells those heavy metals to stop. Stop where you are. You're not getting into the brain. Now, they'll still wreak havoc on your joints and your nervous system and things like that, but they won't get into the brain until you drink some fluoridated water. And when I say don't, some of it does, but the blood-brain barrier is pretty effective. You drink fluoridated water, now all of a sudden you have basically shot that traffic cop. You have opened up the blood-brain barrier to these heavy metals to come in. When Alzheimer's patients' brains were sliced up, okay, after they were autopsied, bisectioned, whatever you want to call it, and studied, they found a lot of aluminum in the brain, way more than there ever should have been. And how many of those people were in communities where they were drinking fluoridated water? So you think you're protected because you have a blood-brain barrier. That fluoridated water negates that. Now let's go all the way down to your children who have no blood-brain barrier. That fluoride is actually going in and causing brain damage and cancer. I'm going to go out with the quote I just started this with. In point of fact, fluoride causes more human cancer death and causes it faster than any other chemical. Dr. Bob, on my way out, can you please tell me how much of that you agree with?
It's hard to prove. That's one of the problems we're up against here. But yes, I definitely feel that that's the case, both Barry and Roger. The blood-brain barrier is good for protecting us against some things, but hydrofluorosilicic acid is hydrolyzed almost immediately when it hits the water to fluoride ion. The fluoride ion is tiny and very volatile and goes through the gut first, permeates the gut, and is not protected there, and then it crosses both the blood-brain barrier and also the placental barrier as well. So yes! Women who are pregnant and drinking fluoridated water are affecting their kids before they're even born. And that's because it's such a volatile and aggressive little ion. It's very hard to keep it out of anywhere.
So yes, it's causing all kinds of...
It's causing all kinds of problems. And so it's not just the blood-brain barrier and the cancers. It calcifies the pineal gland in the brain. Yes. It's a highly volatile thyroid enzyme poison or toxin. It's hard on hearts. People that have kidney disease should not be using any fluoride at all, particularly people that are on dialysis. It's contraindicated, and the Canadian Kidney Association has quietly backed away from backing or promoting fluoride. It accumulates 50% of what we drink, accumulates in bone and makes bones thicker, but also makes them more subject to fractures. Right. So it affects virtually every organ and every system in our body, and even the teeth adversely. If you look at fluorosis, early promoters of fluoride has promised us we'd never see as high as 10% fluorosis. In the United States, in their big NHANES, the national population study that's so thorough in the States, the NHANES study from 2017 showed that fluorosis is now, 58% of teenagers. And a lot of the pro-fluoridationists say, oh, that's just cosmetic, that's making the teeth stronger. Well, I'd have to cry bullshit on that one, because it does not make teeth stronger. It makes them more brittle. And also, if you have fluorosis, about 20% of those 58% kids have moderate or severe fluorosis. And moderate or severe fluorosis it affects these teenagers and these kids psychologically and physiologically. So if you're to repair that fluorosis, it can cost into the tens of thousands of dollars per patient. So any $32 or whatever saving that the profluoridationists talk about, it just is not relevant anymore. It costs a lot more to fluoridate and to treat all the problems with fluoridation in the community than any meager savings that we might get from maybe saving half a cavity or one cavity in a lifetime.
I gotta go, Barry.
Too bad, Roger.
I love this. I absolutely love it. Dr. Bob, you know something? I need to get you over on TLB TV, both you and Barry, one day, and we can continue this discussion. This, to me, was almost like Christmas. And it's not that I love the topic. I don't. I hate it. But I love the fact that we're telling people about it.
And thank you, Roger, for what you do, too. I looked up your website, the Liberty Beacon Project, and you have some very good information on there. So I'd be happy to come on your show at any time. I've also been on the Gallico show in the States. Melissa Gallico is doing some great work about fluoridation as well.
Well, there's six other websites.
A lot of people with the acne.
There's six other websites and a TV network. So, yes, we definitely want to talk to you. And, Barry, you got to come, too. And we'll even let you talk this time.
Well, thanks, Roger. I appreciate that.
Y'all have a great day.
I've resigned myself to the fact, buddy, when you're on with me, I get limited information out of my mouth, but that's why I like having you on, because of your level of education and knowledge. So it's all good, my friend. It's always a pleasure having you on, Roger.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Nice to talk with you, Roger.
And you as well, Dr. Bob. Bye, guys.
Well, Northern Health up here in British Columbia, the city council now has got a little bit of a problem on their hands, because Northern Health just released a report on tooth decay in Thornhill, which is a little community west of Terrace here, excuse me, east of Terrace, and Terrace itself. Now, Terrace fluoridates their water, and Thornhill doesn't. And there was a study on tooth decay released 2 weeks ago through Northern Health on the levels of tooth decay in Thornhill and in Terrace. And guess who had less tooth decay? You'll never guess. You'll never guess, Doc. But Thornhill drinks well water that is naturally minerated. It's what you're supposed to be drinking. They have awesome water in Thornhill. 2 miles away in Terrace, you have fluoride, and we also add chlorine to our water. Isn't that great? I mean, a known carcinogenic, one of the most toxic things you can put in your body, and they add it to our water to keep the pipes clean, they tell us. What a ludicrous situation we live in here. It's just not in our water, doctor. It's everywhere. It's anything that's treated with water. It's anything that's grown with water has fluoride in it. So when we talk about the accumulative levels and what it does to the pineal gland, like I said, I'm far from being an expert on this subject, doc. I'm just a common sense person that looks at this and goes, there is just nothing in the world that I can justify in my mind for adding fluoride to our water. None. It is absolutely barbaric.
For sure.
It's criminal. In my world, it's criminal. Sir, go ahead.
I have to agree with that, except for chlorine is a little bit different, Barry. Chlorine is certainly it's not good for you. It's a carcinogen, a possible carcinogen as well. But the difference there is that fluoride is not necessary for one single thing in the body. If fluoride disappeared off the face of the earth, we'd be actually healthier and our teeth would be as good or better. So fluoride is not essential for any function in the body. Now, chlorine kills some of the germs and some of the critters that would cause problems and can even kill some people. So chlorine does have some use. And the second difference is that fluoride is extremely difficult to remove from water. It requires either distillation, which nobody wants to do because that makes essentially dead water, or reverse osmosis, which for a whole house would cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,000 to remove or to put a reverse osmosis system in to remove all the fluoride. You can get a smaller system under your sink for maybe several hundreds of dollars, but then you're still, as you mentioned, bathing and showering in it. So if you're going to remove fluoride, you have to get that complete house reverse osmosis system. Whereas with chlorine, the minute it comes, really the second it comes out of the tap, the chlorine is all dissipated. So if you let something sit on the counter for a minute or two or in a jug or whatever, the chlorine is all gone, whereas the fluoride is still all there.
Okay, I didn't know that, Doc. I didn't know it dissipated that fast. I figured it would be getting into the body. It can't be good to the body in my world. It just can't. Anything chemical can't be good to the body. I mean, I'm lucky here. But I drink water that's coming from a 300,000-year-old glacier. And, boy, I'll tell you, I have a sip of city water, and I feel like I want to puke, literally. Water is the essence of life, and the fact that we are poisoning our water, adding a known neurotoxin. I mean, fluoride to me is just a scam. It is one of the biggest, well, it's one of the scams that's being played out on the public. And if you really think about it, who's benefiting from fluoride being added to our water? Well, I think Big Pharma would be benefiting a little bit, don't you, Doc? With the amount of people and the effect on the body.
As Roger pointed out, it's the industries that produce this stuff and would have to dispose of it at great cost. So they actually make money selling it to us so we can dispose of it in our bodies. And then what we don't use, and that's the other ironic thing too, we only consume about 1% to 2% of the fluoridated water if our community is fluoridated. And the rest goes to flushing our toilets and washing our cars and watering our lawns and goes back into the environment unchecked, which they said it couldn't go into in the first place.
Yeah,
so it's quite an end around the industry has done there.
Yeah, what kind of effect is that having on the biosphere, you know? I mean, exactly. It's everywhere. Yeah.
They're not studying that.
Well, they don't want to release it. They don't want to study anything that's going to be detrimental to their agenda or their mandate of keeping this in our water. I mean, really, when you think about it, we're ingesting a neurotoxin. It's going into our stomach. It's going into all the organs in our body. I've studied the cumulative effect on the pineal gland, which is our third eye. It is just devastating to the human body, and yet we're allowing this to go on as a society. I know the United States lowered their fluoride levels because of the increase or the levels of fluoride fluorosis, but that's not good enough. It's got to be taken away. It's unnecessary, and it's criminal. It really is what we're doing to our children, what we're doing to our bodies. It's also, Doc, you know, one of the point I wanted to make that, you know, the Health Canada has stated, I actually got in touch with Health Canada. I got in touch with the gentleman right head honcho when it comes to the issue of fluoridating water. And my question to him was, is fluoride considered a medicine when it is added to our water to fight the disease of tooth decay? And Health Canada came back with a written statement stating to me that, yes, fluoride is considered to be a medicine when added to municipal drinking sources to fight the disease of tooth decay. Well, that directly contradicts, one, the Geneva Convention, the Nuremberg Trials, and our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. We are not to be mass medicated unless it's complete consent of knowing, informed consent of the public, which a lot of people aren't, and we're not consenting to it, and yet they're continuing to do this. Just a point I wanted to bring up, sir.
Mm-hmm. We do have to be a little careful when we're talking about the BC government mandating this, though, because BC is 98% not fluoridated. So obviously they're not mandating it, or not that they haven't tried, but they're not mandating it for the other communities in BC. So Terrace and Cranbrook and one other community, I think, are the only communities in BC that are continued to be fluoridated.
You know, there's only three communities left in British Columbia. All other communities have had it removed from their water.
If you go across Canada, Alberta is now down to about a third, roughly. It depends who you talk to, but between 30 and 42% fluoridated in Alberta. Ontario is the highest fluoridated by, they're looking at about 70 to 71%.
Of the water.
Of people fluoridated. So, right. Ontario is by far the most heavily fluoridated province in Canada. And then a lot of the eastern seaboard is much less fluoridated. So overall, Canada is at about 40% fluoridated right now, whereas the U.S. is at 74 to 75% fluoridated. But if you look at the health of the teeth in the United States, particularly in the cities that are fluoridated, their teeth are not as good as cities like Vancouver and Montreal in Canada that have never been fluoridated, or in Europe that's 97% not fluoridated. Teeth in Europe are better than the teeth in the fluoridated cities in the United States. So why they could even carry on and say this is the be-all and end-all and one of the top 10 medical miracles and whatever, it just makes no sense at all, because the vast majority of the world, actually less than 6% of the world is fluoridated. We're looking probably around 5% of the world being fluoridated. And yet they make people like us in Calgary Since we ended fluoridation in 2011, the pro-fluoridationists make us sound like we're the outliers, that we're the rebels here, that we're not following what every other sane city and district and community does in the world. Well, we're actually in the large majority here in Calgary by ending fluoridation. We're with 95% of the world. So how they can even say that is beyond me.
Did we lose them? Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Barry, if, are we still on?
Yeah, I just lost you there for a second, Doc.
Okay. Barry, if you need any help in Terrace, I'd be glad to come on any radio shows there, or I don't know if they can do long-distance TV shows, but anything that I can do to help you in Terrace, because you are the outliers there. You're in the 2% of British Columbia that's fluoridated, and obviously that study you're just quoting, and there's other studies out there too that show that, there's studies all across the map. So if you look at the efficacy or efficiency of fluoride, the very most you're going to get is one, maybe two cavities a lifetime saved by water fluoridation.
Right.
But some studies show no difference at all from fluoridated to non-fluoridated jurisdictions. And other studies show actually in non-fluoridated areas, the amount of tooth decay goes down from fluoridated areas. So exactly. Studies can show all three different scenarios. So, but at the very best, you're saving one to two cavities in a lifetime. Now, is that worth the cost and the aggravation and the polarization and the contentiousness of this program, and also all the possible harms that it does to people to save one or two cavities in a lifetime?
Exactly. There's one video that I recommend people watching. It's The Biophysics of Fluoride. It's by Dr. Jack Gross. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Very, very informed. And also Dr. David Kennedy has released quite a few good videos on fluoride. I know it's being fought all over the country, and you're right, we are one of the last communities in British Columbia. Why this community can't get their poop together and get it removed. Council has basically said to us after this last push we had that they won't even look at it again. It's a closed issue. I beg your pardon. Yeah, this came right out of city council. We also have our mayor now who apparently wants to promote the use of fluoride in British Columbia. So that's what I'm dealing with in Terrace here. It's really messed up, my friend. But you know what? You're right, Doug.
Put them in contact with me.
I would. I'd love to fly you up here and have you speak at one of our council meetings for about 10 minutes because they just refuse to listen to facts. And that is a travesty going on in my society right now. I would love, if I ever got some money, I'll tell you, Doc, I'd be going after them with legal litigation that would rock their world because they are force medicating the public against the public's will.
Yeah.
And if I talk to most people in fluoride, in Terrace, they're against it. Yet our council is still ramming it down our throat. Go ahead.
So, Barry, if you can get me their email addresses, I'll be glad to send them some information. And I'd like to keep it short and sweet with them. But I have a nice fact sheet called Water Fluoridation Basics that I developed so I can talk to people in select city council and the decision makers here in Alberta. And any one of those 15 points that I have on my water fluoridation basic sheet is enough that it should end water fluoridation forever. But all 15 together make a very powerful statement. And it's just one page. It's very easy to read. The other thing you can do is you can recommend them to my website, which is www.safewatercalgary.com. That's safewatercalgary.com. And right on the home page of my website is a beautiful video, just a 12-minute video by a dentist from Portland who's highly informed and knowledgeable about fluoridation. And he debunks a lot of the myths around fluoridation. So just that little 12-minute video, if you can get them to watch that to start with, that can certainly open some doors.
You know, Doc, when I went after council here 3 years ago on fluoride, and I provided them with numerous, numerous, numerous pages of hardcore factual information about water fluoridation. And they, I'm sure, didn't even look at it, Doc. They just completely refused to look at facts. So it's a real battle I got going on here. It really is.
It is.
I feel like I'm living, like I said. Go ahead.
Sometimes they won't look at a lot of science, Barry, because they get so much science from both sides. And counselors are, generally speaking, not scientists. So if they're not scientists, how do they wade through all these realms of scientific information? So one of the ways we won the battle here in Calgary was on the morals and the ethics of mass medicating everybody. So essentially, it's not ethical to force a substance on the entire population, first of all, without informed consent. As a doctor, anything I do, I have to inform the patient of the pros and cons of what I'm doing. And right. that is called informed consent. And so we're mass medicating without informed consent because half the people on the street don't even know if they're fluoridated or not. And they've never heard about all the possible harms and side effects of fluoridation for sure, because the right. fluoridationists will always just say, oh, safe and effective, which of course it's not. So it's the ethics and morality of forcing the substance on them without informed consent, as I mentioned before, without control of dose or dosage, and without any follow-up or continuity involved at all. They just say, take as much as you want for the rest of your life. We'll never talk to you again. We'll never monitor you again. Just trust us that it's good for you, and end of story. Mm. If I tried to do that as a physician, I'd be in big trouble. I'd lose my license.
You'd lose your license, exactly. Well, we're going to go after him again here, but we are actually going to go on a legal aspect now of what we just talked about, force medicating the public against their full informed and public consent, in which we don't have in Terrace. So we have a lot of people now in Terrace that are against fluoridation. The council does not listen to them. They're strictly going by a mandate to keep this in our water. And like I said, we're only one of three communities left. You'd think the rest of British Columbia would be writing a letter to the council here in Terrace, but they're not. And I would appreciate any input that you could send them, Doc, because they sure don't listen. They don't.
How many people are in Terrace now?
We have about 18,000 in the Terrace area. And if you took in, Terrace and Thornhill, we're up to about 22,000 in the area. So it's a healthy population.
Well, it's just Terrace that drinks the fluoridated water.
Yeah, Terrace adds it and Thornhill doesn't. Like I said, that study by Northern Health, if that doesn't get them to remove fluoride from the water here in Terrace, I don't know what we will, because Thornhill is showing better levels of tooth health than Terrace is. So it's contradicting their agenda totally.
And that should be enough right there to convince some of the counselors to get rid of it. Because for the water treatment people, it's a real pain. They have to wear all kinds of protective gear, in some cases hazmat suits. It's very hard on the infrastructure in the water system that delivers the fluoride, that puts it into our water systems, because it's so highly corrosive. It eats away at metal and at plastics and at welding and solders, and it leaches more lead out of the system. I mean, there's all kinds of problems with the infrastructure. Plus, it's expensive.
Can't be hurting our bodies then. Can't be hurting our bodies then, can it?
No.
What a joke, Doc. It really is. It's sad, but it is. You got to laugh at it, because it is such a hypocrisy what's going on here with them continuing this practice and the information that's out there now and the fact that we can't get it stopped. But there is some
interesting.
The fluoride alert's got some pretty powerful movements going on right now down in the States. There's a couple that I'm watching.
We work closely with them.
Yeah,
you probably are familiar with the lawsuit that Michael Connett, the son of Paul Connett, the founder of Fluoride Action Network, is doing. Michael is doing. He's a lawyer in California, and he's doing a big lawsuit against the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency in the States. And if he can win his lawsuits showing that fluoride is actually neurotoxic and we shouldn't be mass medicating with it, that'll be the end of water fluoridation in the U.S.
That's the one that I've been following, Doc. And boy, I'll tell you, that would stop it all. There would be no argument for it going forward. As a matter of fact, exactly. I think there'd be some lawsuits filed against the people that have been propagating this agenda for damage done to our body. I mean, we should be able to take these people to court for what they're doing, because they're knowingly. Go ahead. That's going down a deep rabbit hole, I know. But
that's a very expensive and tedious process, too. Chris Gupta in Ontario has done some of that work. And boy, it's a long and drawn out process.
And you got to have money.
And usually they have a lot deeper pockets than we do, too.
Exactly.
So that's probably not the way to go. But again, if Michael wins that lawsuit in California, in the States, that's going to have ripple effects all over the world. So Australia, that's heavily fluoridated, New Zealand, that's trying to fluoridate their whole country, Ireland, that's still totally fluoridated by national mandate, and Canada, that's 40% fluoridated. We're all going to take a close, hard look at that. If they win that lawsuit, I think it'll be gone in all those countries I just mentioned.
Well, let's hope that comes to tuition, Doc, because that would be a good day for the world. I had a question in chat here from a girl named Moon Girl. She's asking me if you ever heard of Deacon Watt. Apparently, he's a quite active person in Irish fighting fluoride.
Oh, and Declan Waugh. Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Declan. He's a very good guy. He's an ardent researcher. He's done so much work on fluoridation. And so he's essentially leading the anti-fluoride charge in Ireland, along with a number of other folks, too. But he's right at the forefront. And his research is impeccable. He's really come up with some facts and figures about thyroid disease and illness and some of the cancers and other things that are more prevalent in the fluoridated areas of Ireland as opposed to the non-fluoridated areas. So, yeah, he's one to watch. And I wouldn't be surprised within the next year or two, they'll actually reverse that decision in Ireland and withdraw that national fluoride mandate.
Well, the knowledge is expanding worldwide about this, Doc. I see it everywhere, and people are becoming more and more aware of this practice and how detrimental it is. So we got to really push it.
But yet in Calgary, they're really pushing hard. Like the community health people and the public health people in Calgary at the University of Calgary are really pushing hard with City Council to reintroduce it. And now with Windsor actually falling, you probably heard that Windsor reversed their vote last month. They had had a 5-year moratorium on fluoridation. They took it out 5 years ago, and then they voted last month to reintroduce fluoride. And it was actually at the very same level of votes. It was they won the anti-fluoridation vote by 8-3 in the city council in 2013, and then last month they lost the anti-fluoridation vote. In other words, the pro-fluoride people won it by 8-3. So it's an exact reversal of 5 years ago. And the reason that happened is because they imported, the medical officer of health imported Johnny Johnson, who's he's a questionable dentist from California, and he founded the American Fluoridation Society back about 3 or 4 years ago and installed himself as president. And they brought him in, and you know he's perceived by the public and by his counselors as an authority figure. He's a dentist, and he's head of this American Fluoridation Society. And we have all the tapes from that particular presentation to City Council last month, and he told so many lies and had so much misinformation. It was just pathetic. And yet, he spoke last, and so no one there to refute him. And so between him and the medical officer of health, Dr. Ahmed is his name, both of them just put out so much misinformation that City Council went, oh, wow, these are the authority figures. We have to listen to them. And so they overturned the vote and put it back in.
Wow. So you don't have a recourse to go actually challenge the facts that they're stating to the council? You can't go ahead and challenge that?
Yes. There's some things underway now that I'm not at liberty to speak about on to the public. But there will be some challenges to that particular decision. And one of the things with the Windsor decision is that there's two smaller communities, LaSalle and Tecumseh, I believe they are. And those two areas are fluoridated by Windsor. They get their water from Windsor. And so those two communities are having votes later on this month. And so it'll be interesting to see what they say. Unfortunately, they're kind of between a rock and a hard place, because if they decide they don't want fluoride in their water, they have to stop buying their water from Windsor and get their water from somewhere else. So they either have to build a water treatment plant, which would be very expensive, or buy it from somewhere else that's not fluoridated. So their options are fairly limited. But anyway, we're working with those councils, and hopefully they'll at least put up some sort of resistance against the Windsor decision.
Is there any way that people can flush fluoride from their body, Doc? Is there anything that people can do to flush fluoride from their body?
It's very difficult. Yeah, it's extremely difficult. There are some herbal medicines that are touted to do that. There's not any real good studies on that, to my knowledge. But the bioaccumulation, that's one of the problems with fluoride, and things like arsenic and lead and strontium and cadmium and mercury and other things that come along with this hydrofluorosilicic acid that's scrubbed out of the waste industry stacks. It comes with all those things and trace elements. Well, they're below the allowable levels that's allowed by Canadian government and by Health Canada. Sure, they're below those levels, but they bioaccumulate. They accumulate in our body over time. And so fluoride, for instance, bioaccumulates mostly in bone, in the pineal gland, and in some of the other neurological tissues. And yeah, it accumulates over a lifetime. And what does that do to us over a lifetime? We just don't study that. We're not sure. It doesn't do anything today or tomorrow, or else the pleura would be long gone. But over a lifetime, it most certainly affects a lot of people. Not all of us, but maybe, say, a third of people are affected adversely by this bioaccumulation of fluoride and arsenic and some of these other compounds that come along with it.
Yeah, I actually read about a couple of naturals that claim to have an effect on fluoride, but I can't find any hardcore studies backing it up. So,
the main thing, Barry, is that people, if people stop drinking fluoridated water, filter their water, don't use packaged foods and canned foods and teas that have a lot of fluoride in, if they kind of get most of the fluoride out of their lives, the fluoride that's already in their body will not have a whole lot of effect. But if you continue to add more and more fluoride on top of that, that's when you get the more physiological effects that are prevalent and damaging.
Well, I avoid it like the plague up here, Doc. I don't drink city water, and I'm living in the parameters of the city of Terrace, and yet I go over to my son's house in Thornhill to have my showers and baths. So I'm avoiding it like the plague. It's pretty bad when I got to go over to my boy's house to have a bath because I don't want to be sitting in a tub full of fluoride. But that's what I do.
Yeah, but good for you. You're aware of that. But Barry, an interesting study, and you could do it fairly small too, with just a couple or 300 people in Terrace. Just do a small study and say how many people actually drink the tap water. And I bet a lot of people in Terrace use bottled water because maybe it tastes better, but some of them might be aware of fluoride. Some might think there's other chemicals in there, hormones, antibiotics, whatever. But I bet if you did a study, a lot of people in Terrace don't even drink the fluoridated water.
I just tell people in Terrace to take a liter of city water and let it evaporate and see what's in the bottom when it's finished. And tell me you want to drink it. Yeah. Terrace has got the worst. We're living in the most beautiful country in a part of British Columbia up here. We have some of the best water. We have some of the best water in the world. And yet our city water is the worst water that you could possibly ever drink. It absolutely tastes like crap.
Because they're taking some of the best water in the world and putting a highly toxic element into it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, people tell you they can't drink Terrace city water. It makes them sick. Go ahead.
Right. Another thing I'd like to mention, too, is the pro-fluoridationists talk about safe and effective. Well, we went to Health Canada a couple of years ago and said, could we have, please, all the studies on safety and all the studies of efficacy on hydrofluorosilicic acid in our water? And it took them a year and a half to come back to us. And guess what they said? Sorry, we have no studies. That meet your request. And so they have no studies on safety. They have no studies on efficacy or efficiency of fluoridation. And yet every day they tell us it's safe and effective. So that's quite paradoxical. And the one thing I want to add to that is, guess who's affected most by the side effects of water fluoridation or of excess fluoride? Infants before they're born, it's fetuses, it's infants and babies and young children, it's the poor and the working class because they can't afford to not, you know, they can't afford bottled water or these expensive reverse osmosis systems. It's the chronically ill, it's people with kidney disease and that like, and it's the elderly. And the last thing is, it's people of color that are most adversely affected by the side effects of water fluoridation. So in the States, there's a big movement by the Black community and by the Mexican communities to actually stand up against water fluoridation because their people are affected more adversely by the side effects than Caucasians are.
Yeah, I did actually read a report about that a couple of years ago, Doc, and a good point brought, that's for sure. Why? Why do they continue this, Doc, when they must be aware? You know, I say to myself, these people that are behind this movement to keep fluoride in our water must be aware at this point of the negative effects of it. It's just too much information out there. So why are they not looking at this information and refusing to accept it as proof? And they continue down and this path. So there's an agenda. It almost like there's an agenda to it.
Well, it's a very important question that you're asking there, Barry. Like, why do they keep doing this? And my answer to that is it's multifactorial. One of it is, Sinclair Upton said, he said, it's very hard to convince people to change their minds when their paychecks depend on not changing their minds.
Right.
And then Alan Greenspan, who almost crashed our whole financial institutions in the 1990s and the early 2000s, He finally retired and admitted that his policies were wrong. And he said in his memoirs, in his book, that one of the most difficult things in the world is for someone in the public service to change their mind. He said, indeed, it's a Herculean task, which means it's so hard for people in the public service to change their mind. And doctors and medical people, dentists, you can lump them in there as well, are definitely in that category too. We do not like to admit that we're wrong. And yet we've been wrong so many times about so many things. We've been wrong about tobacco. We used to support tobacco and we were convinced that smoking cigarettes was good for pregnant women. We supported asbestos and lead and gasoline and BPA and mercury and thalidomide and Vioxx and so many others. And we've been wrong a lot of times. And I think our profession just does not want to be wrong yet again. So that's one of the major reasons why we still promote, why our professions, medical and dental professions, 90% of people in them still support water fluoridation. We don't want to be wrong yet again.
That sounds kind of sad to me, Doc. It really does. When
it does.
Yeah, when people's pride get in the way of fact. You know, because to me, like I said, I've looked at this for years and years and years now, and I just cannot justify the practice in any shape or form. And why it's still going on is a big question to me, but my thanks to guys like you and Roger and other people that I know that are involved in the fight for continuing to bring this information forward. We've got a big fight in front of us, but I think we're making headway.
We are in some ways, and in some ways, some places like Windsor, we're actually losing the battle. So they're coming after us next here in Calgary, so we have to be on our toes here. We have to keep reminding people that fluoride is not necessary for any body function ever. And we shouldn't be comparing it. Like a lot of times the pro-fluoridationists will compare it to vitamin B, vitamin D, which they add to various foods and drinks. We shouldn't be comparing it to that because those things are essential for our health. Fluoride is not necessary for any function. So it should not be said even in the same sentence or the same breath as vitamin B and D, or even for that matter, chlorination, which we talked about earlier, which actually kills some organisms before they reach our body and which we can dispose of a lot easier. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have chlorination either.
I've even seen fluoride being advertised as a nutrient. I mean, that's so far from the truth, folks.
It's not even funny.
It is not a nutrient. There's nothing. There's nothing. It's a proven fact that it's not, but I have seen that in advertising around that, around fluoride. I remember seeing, I forget exactly what it was, but they were calling it a nutrient. I mean, going, come on, guys, this isn't neutral. There is naturally occurring fluoride in our world, of course, but what's coming out of the smokestack sure ain't a nutrient. But what about naturally occurring fluoride? There's lots of that in our world. What was it? There was a doctor in 1904 in America started noticing brown caps on his community. They're rampant amount of brown capping on top of his citizens' teeth. And they started studying the water, and they found super high levels of natural fluoridation in the water. So it was natural fluoride good for teeth, or is it in the same classification as a chemical being made called sodium fluoride? My question.
Well, it is quite different because natural calcium fluoride is virtually in everywhere. It's in all our rock and most of our water systems. Like in Calgary here, we have 0.2 parts per million in our bow system, which feeds the north part of Calgary. And then the elbow system, which feeds the south part of Calgary, we have 0.3 parts per million of natural calcium fluoride. So the pro-fluoridation is just say, we're just topping up the natural calcium fluoride. 0.7 parts per million. But there's a lot of difference, as I pointed out earlier, between hydrofluorosilicic acid, which ionizes right away to the fluoride ion and crosses all the barriers in our body, gut barrier, blood-brain barrier, placental barrier. And the calcium fluoride, which is natural, if we just had that and only drank that, calcium fluoride, the fluoride is very tightly bound to the calcium. So when it goes into our gut, most of it's just passed out through our system. It's not broken down, it's not ionized, and it doesn't get into our system as the fluoride ion. So our body is able to handle calcium fluoride, but the hydrofluorosilicic acid is a whole other story. Ionized right away, immediately available to all cells, organ system in our body.
Right. Well, you know, Doc, we're down to the last minute in the hour here. Can you want to give people a quick information where they can find you? And I'll have to shut out the hour.
Yeah, so my name is Dr. Bob Dickson, D-I-C-K-S-O-N. I'm in Calgary, Alberta. And our website here is www.safewatercalgary, all one word, safewatercalgary.com. And as I mentioned, there's that beautiful 12-minute video on the homepage of our website called Fluoride 101. So we can be contacted through that website. And most certainly, anybody that wants any assistance or information can contact me. They can contact me through you as well, Barry, because you have all my contact information. And anybody that needs any assistance on this, I'll do my best to help you, because I just feel so strongly as a medical doctor that this is one of the worst public health initiatives we've ever had. It's been called by very prominent people, Nobel laureates in medicine, and by senior scientists at the Environmental Protection Agency in the States as the biggest scam that's ever been propagated against humanity. I definitely agree with that, and it should be gone forever, and I'll do whatever I can to help make it gone.
Well, kudos to you, sir, and it's been an absolute honor to have you on here today, and I will do anything that I can to help you, and vice versa. Anybody wants to get information on Dr. Bob Dixon, you can contact me or go to his websites. Thanks again for coming in, Doc, and I will send that information on Terrace City Council, and it has been a pleasure, sir, having you on.
It's a pleasure, Barry, and thanks for all you do out there, and best of luck with your terrorism.
Okay, folks, so I'm going to take a two-minute break here, or maybe five-minute break, and Steve's going to play a song, and I'm going to be back. I'm going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about that demon plant called cannabis and all its negative effects on the human race. Yeah, right. We'll be back in 5 minutes, guys. Bye-bye. Well, thanks again to Dr. Bob Dixon for joining me in the first hour in very, very enjoyable conversation. We're going to shift gears here a little bit in the second hour, and I'm going to talk. Milo, get out of there. Hey, hang on. My dog's into the cat food. Hang on. Get out of there. Out.
Dog of water.
Sorry about that. Sorry about that. Can't have that, man. Anyways, that's a terrible conversation, but we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about that evil cannabis plant, the destroyer of the gateway drug. I'm joined, of course, by Steve Danks, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Steve here. I think it's been about a year now since I've had a conversation with him, but really, really enjoy talking with a man, funny as hell. And we're going to call him, well, I call him the cannabis guru, but he likes to be called the cannabis farmer. How are you doing, Steve? Welcome to the show.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you. Looking forward to the 2019 season, which we're preparing. I believe we start around about next month to prepare the land, dress it so that we can go to the ground in 1st of May. That's when we plant. Yep. So we're looking good. Yeah.
So where are you going in Jamaica, correct, Steve?
No. I tried Jamaica. I love Jamaica, but trying to do anything on Jamaica, yeah, man. Chill out, okay. Man. Look, Jamaica's fine for an holiday, but trying to go there and do some work, yeah, it's just not. And also, as well, there was a very strange anomaly in Jamaica because I was there for the legalization. And I can only say that for a country that went legal almost 4 years ago, oh, they completely made the big, you couldn't have made a bigger mess if you tried. And one of the reasons I left the island is because they decided to ban hemp. And I'm a hemp man, by the way. I love cannabis, love all forms of cannabis, but I'm a professional, what you lot call hemp or what I call cannabis or marijuana, or in the country that I'm growing is known as canopia, or yeah, it's got various names, but anyway, whatever name you're familiar with, yeah, Jamaica banned the low THC one because some fool and idiot who was in charge of this stuff decided that it would cross-pollinate, and he wouldn't listen to any reason or any rhyme or any scientific facts on it. And really what I wanted to do was, because I don't need to go to Jamaica and teach Jamaicans how to grow THC. Exactly. I wanted to take the hemp information there, and really my little plan was to cut down the sugar cane, which is being subsidized by some incredible amount. If I say 10 million, I most probably got it wrong. It's most probably 100 million. But it's a vast amount of money for the island of Jamaica. And that is subsidizing the sugar industry. And as I kept saying to them, let's look at history, guys. 400 years, what has sugar ever given you? Nothing. And at the moment, because the Jamaicans have got the highest, that they eat, If we in the West and in the USA, I'm in the USA, right, sort of us lot, if we eat, say, 10 kilos of sugar per year, well, I don't eat any, by the way, but sort of average family, average person, right, the Jamaicans would eat 100 kilos. They are addicted to sugar. Hence, diabetes and obesity is right there. But they like their sugar, even though it's costing them 100, whatever. So anyway, with that in mind, I just left because it was banging a head on a brick wall. And I didn't fancy just sitting there watching the sun go down at Montego Bay, which is very nice, by the way, if anybody's not done it. So I love Jamaica, but for me, for a working hemp farmer, it had no future.
Okay, so where are you again now, Steve? I missed that.
I'm basically, for the last 3 years, I've been based in Transylvania. Dracula country.
Well, it hasn't been 3 years since I talked to you, has it been?
Yeah, man, I've been down there.
Oh, man, I thought it was like about a year ago.
In fact, this season will be my fourth season now. So I'm sort of,
man, excuse me.
I'm one of them now.
Well, boy, yeah. I'll tell you, my memory must be fading because I didn't think it was 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
Well, you know, you're just having time flies, too much I guess. Fun without me. You know,
well, time flies, man.
Time flies, yeah. And especially in the cannabis world, doesn't it? Because things happen so quickly. Let's face it, you can go to bed tonight, wake up tomorrow. The whole information for another country's gone legal. What was it the other day? Thailand. Draconian laws in Thailand about smoking cannabis, supported by the Americans, I might add. Okay, for every arrest that the police do, apparently they get like $200 for every Western leg. So it was financially viable for them. Well, they decided it's more financially viable if they bloody grow the stuff, tax it, and make their own money without taking any subsidies from one of those PLC agencies that are basically based in America. So, I mean, that was just, to me, that was just a total surprise, you know? Yeah.
So what have you got? You're growing down in Pennsylvania now? You got some land that you're growing on down there?
Yeah, I sort of got a little bit myself because I'm always broke. Or as my kids say, you never got any money, Dad, because you always spend it on cannabis. That is about it. I'm seriously money in, money out. And I don't mean I'll go out and buy half a pound of that and sit there and smoke it. Every penny I get, I just reinvest back into what I do. One day we might catch up, but at the moment I'm basically self-financing, self-operating. Blah blah blah. So I've got a little piece of land down there. I could do with some more, but I basically what I do is use contract farmers. And again, I think this is the way forward because yes, there is massive great farms down there. I mean, Ben Jonkers, Sensi Sue, Hemp Flax, one of the most famous. A good friend of mine, I might add. I mean, Ben and his company moved down there 4 years ago. Ben invested about $1 million out of his own pocket. He got some European funding and somebody else. And in 4 years, I think they've quadrupled production. Yeah. Now, he's got a farm over there that I've never... Well, it's not a farm. It's basically a region now. I think he's got 10,000, 1,000 square hectare. Okay. It's absolutely everywhere down in a place called Sevish, not far from Cluj in Transylvania. I'm fine with that because Ben uses a lot of stuff. He needs a lot of stuff. He's got massive, great machinery and he's turning it into fibers and things for the car industry. Like, he's a big player. I want to be a small player. And I want to look after basically what I call, I want to work with contract farmers, stay local, bio-regional development, feeding back into the economy, okay? So most of these villages, they grow their own food and they've all got land and they're all very familiar with cannabis. Because, you see, it only has skipped one generation now. All the grandmothers and all the grandfathers, or anybody prior to Ceaușescu, and they only got him out 26 years ago. Romania's only been free for 26 years. Bear that in mind. Before that, it was under some socialist regime. Yeah, I'm not going to say it was bad or good, because since I've been there, I've learned a lot more about it. Asked me 4 years ago, I would go, oh, he was a dictator and blah, blah, blah. But living in the country, I've learned a lot more about what one is. So I'm not putting the guy out. But basically, the country's only been open for 26 years. They've got a lot of catching up to do. because they were shut off. Oh man, it's pristine. We got the last natural forest left in Europe, yeah? Which obviously might seem strange to you guys in Canada and America because you're so big, yeah. But think about it: the last natural forest left in Europe is in Transylvania. So we got to look after the ecology there, and we got to look after the economy because the economy, honestly, is almost an average wage for a worker can be as little as $10 a day. You get a good day's work for that, all right? So that gives you some idea. And if he gets £10, he can feed his kids on that and all that, you know, all right? It's just awful because imagine that going to work for $10. Even in America, they don't pay you that at Mac and D.
I'm getting a question in chat there. They're asking me if you said Pennsylvania or Transylvania.
Transylvania, Romania. Okay.
There you go. Okay.
No, Pennsylvania is fracking. I'm not a fracker.
question asked.
I'll go there when they need it all cleaning up. I'll go there and we do the part of remediation with BM and clean out of that nasty poison that they've allowed all these people to put in the ground. But I think that's going to be a few years off. Okay. So I've got nothing against Pennsylvania. In fact, I'd love to go there. I was brought up in that sort of, my mum always used to play Glenn Miller. What was it? The Pennsylvania choo choo choo.
Yeah, well, they're calling you a vampire now, so I hope you're not a vampire.
Oh, they call me. I will suck your blood. And as I suck it out, I will change it for cannabis.
A stone vampire, they're calling you.
Yeah, Mum. Call me what you want. I don't care. Been called worse.
Well, it's all good fun. They're just having fun in chat there. And
yeah. So this is what I'm going to do. Is I'm looking at using small, basically family small holdings. Yeah. And if they can grow me a hectare of this stuff, yeah, which is 2.3 acres, because you lot work in acres, like sort of 2.5 acres, because we work in acres, because we're metric down here, yeah? Right. They've all got a bit of land. Now, they all know how to grow it, because grandmother and grandfather are still alive, and they always grew it, because what I was saying prior to Ceausescu, it was one of the major staple crops that they used, and they used it for everything, for the seed, for the fibre. I mean, some of the antique clothing down there is incredible. I met one young lady a couple of years ago. She just got married, okay? She had 4 generations of clothing on. She had her great-great-grandmother's sort of apron that she got married in. And then her grandmother's top that she got married in. And then, you understand, she was wearing 4 generations of her family's clothing. And then she had a new bit for her wedding. That's incredible, man. And she looked so pretty, all dressed in, well, basically hemp-retted, hemp-spun, hemp-fibred traditional clothing.
Huh? I know, I've got a hemp t-shirt, buddy, and I've had it for 30 years now.
Oh, you know it.
And it feels like the day. And when I put it on, it feels like I'm putting on the earth, man.
Well, they get softer, don't they?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You can't hurt it. You just can't hurt it.
Well, look, like a fool, many, many years ago, the first thing I'd done with them is I went into the sort of fashion industry, clothing industry. Yeah? And I sort of understood them then. Obviously, nothing like I do now. And that was the problem. The clothes weren't wearing out. So I was selling a pair of jeans. Oh, well, that was it. Now, I'm not saying you should have a built-in shelf life, but for the business model that we run today, clothing that lasts, well, 1 generation, 2 generations, 3 generations, even 4. And these are not in museums, okay? It might go back home and go in the chest. If that were cotton, that would have rotted down anyway.
You're lucky to get 3 or 4 years out of a cotton t-shirt.
Oh, man, especially these days. The chemicals that he uses and the water that he uses are just like off the scale.
What is it? 3.5 ton of pesticide and fertilizer are used for every ton of cotton that's grown. And the water, well, even if I told you, you just wouldn't believe me. Go and look it up, how much water. And, of course, that water is all wash off, containing all the chemicals that Monsanto gave them to grow the cotton. So cotton is a finite product. India, one of the greatest growers, is going to turn its back on it shortly because they're going to reinstate hemp. And there is, you know, I know you've got a problem with the vets in America. If you look at how many farmers have been committing suicide because they turn their land over to these chemical companies on these Roundup seeds, and now they've totally destroyed the land. That's land that's been held for centuries by family that's passed on to family. And the only thing they can do is take a gun. Well, not a gun, because they can't afford a bullet. Nah. So I'm not going to try and even
explain that. Let's talk about the effects of cannabis, the root systems on cannabis on soil when we use it.
Well, the root system's quite... I love roots. I'm actually a root man. Yeah? I'm sort of more the root man than the top-end man. So I've always believed that in the roots, like a ginseng root or a ginger root, that's where the powerhouse lies. And I think you're going to find some science coming out in the very near future that's going to start explaining about the root. Mm-hmm. Now, the root system's quite interesting because when you plant the seed in natural land, yeah, the first thing she does is send down this long taproot. And that taproot will keep going until it finds a decent source of water, okay? Now, as soon as it's found water, it knows it can live. So up come them first little green leaves. Yeah, the pisal leaves, I believe they call them over here. And they will track the sun like a sunflower. And that's sending the information back to the root. And it's letting that root know where it is and how much sunlight it's got and all the information it's got. As soon as he's got that, that's when he starts jumping out of the ground. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah? Now, as he's doing that, the root system is sending off all these tendrils. Yeah? And Jesus Christ, man, I've seen some that are so long, you wouldn't even believe it. So basically, a whole field of cannabis is all connected by the root system. And also around root systems, you find a lot of the mycelium, mushrooms.
Right.
So that's like the neural network. Now, I know scientifically, I'm not going to try and tell you what's in this root, but there is some people out there that have started to look at it, and there is some very interesting compounds. But my theory is, if it ain't in the root, it can't be in the top, because everything comes from a root. Now, also with the root system, it does something called, a big word, called pyral remediation. Now, they used it down in Chernobyl. I don't know if anybody remember Chernobyl. That was that Russian nuclear plant that went off many moons ago. So they were left with some dirty, filthy land down there that couldn't be used. It was a Canadian company that went over there, and they planted hemp just for a crack. Because they knew it was like, but all plants make this thing called pyral remediation. But anybody that doesn't know what pyral remediation is it basically the plant pulls the poisons out of the land. So dirty land, it turns clean. Right. Now, when they pulled this stuff up and they tested the dirt, soil, the strontium levels, I believe it was just literally dropped by about 50%. Now, after three generations, that soil is basically deemed to be organic.
Right.
Now, what they were left with were plants that were radioactive. Because it had drawn all the radioactive stuff up, strontium-137 and all them nuclear words, yeah? And they didn't know what to do with them. And some very clever fellow went, oh, well, that's easy. Because you've got it all trapped, you stick it in this magnetic bombardment and it takes the shelf life down from these 1.5 million or 2.5 million, whatever they are, years. It drops its shelf life down to about 100 years.
Oh.
So it basically eats radiation. Now, there was a conference in Japan a few years ago where the Prime Minister's wife, yeah, because obviously Japan's got a big problem with leaking radioactive stuff, and they were trying to push this to use hemp for pyral remediation to clean the land. Well, did they listen? No, obviously not. Even though Japan, like everywhere, has an absolutely amazing history of hemp, yeah? From Shinto temples to the cloth of the Buddha, all sorts of things, yeah? You know, they burnt it in the temples. It's revered. It's spiritual to them, yeah? But obviously, again, because of the what happened in the 60s, everybody got the hump with it. Everybody's turned its back on it. Well, she's got to come back, hasn't she? Because there's nothing else to me. There is nothing else out there that comes even close to what the cannabis plant can do.
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. I mean, literally, the plant can heal this planet from the inside out. You know, I mean...
And not just heal it. When we use its fiber, we're not using rotten cotton. When we make our plastics from them, they're non-polluting, biodegradable, and 7 times stronger than chemical plastics. So everywhere you look, whatever this plant does, He don't just do it a little bit. It slams the floor, man. There's no comparison.
Well, let's talk about hemp-based building products, man. It's just unbelievable.
Oh, well, I'll come up with the hemp building products. Like, well, look, all you.
Well, I'm involved right now, and we're making unbelievable headway in this community. I have a local reservation here that are just about to commit to 18 houses this year being built with hemp. And boy, I'll tell you, if we can get this going forward, Steve, all the reservations around the terrace area will be looking at what's going on, and it will go viral. And the sooner, the better. I'm involved with a company called Just Biofiber out of Calgary. I think I sent you a leak on them this week.
I believe you did. Unbelievable.
It's just a no-brainer. When people start really understanding the properties of hemp as opposed to conventional building product, there is just no comparison. None whatsoever.
None whatsoever. Look.
Yeah.
I mean, know it's British. Blows me away. Has anybody ever heard of a place called the British Library? Okay.
I've heard of it.
It's a big place in London. Yeah, and the British Museum. That's basically a treasure trove of everything that the English stole for many years, and they put it all in the big museum in London. Now, both of those places have been using hempcrete to build their new add-ons because it's such a fantastic building material. This is the British Library. This is the British Museum. Okay. So I'm just saying, so if it's good enough for them, it's certainly good enough for me. Now, moving this hempcrete on, which is fantastic in itself. I have worked with it. I've worked with Steve Allen. I've made it myself. I found a way for it to produce energy. I've been watching this. Have you seen any work on these capacitor discharge batteries made from hemp fiber?
I've seen a little bit about that, and I've also looked
at... Yeah, well, I met a guy in Slovenia that was very up on this, and he told me something, and a little, you know, that little spark goes off in your head, doesn't it? Huh? And I don't make hempcrete, I make something called hempstone, which is basically the same, it's just a slightly different technique for making it, yeah? And by doing a few things to it, it actually produces electricity. Now, at the moment, I can run anything between 1 and a reading of 12, but it's very... The first one I've done was made 4 years ago. Unfortunately, I've not had time to go back to it. I'm going to revisit it this year. But any output that stone can give, even if it's 1 volt, yeah, it's still free energy. But as I say, I believe we can run it up to 12 volt because I understand a bit more about what I'm doing now. So the next project is to make something, another one, and start getting it to run at 12 volt. Now, this is not something like a solar panel that needs charging or moving. It actually produces power itself. And with these discharge batteries, what discharge means is the more power you're drawing, is the more it makes.
So you put a drain on it and it produces more power. That's what you're saying, me?
Yeah, it's a big Tesla. I had to go and study a lot of Tesla stuff, and I had to go and study Schoberg, the water fellow, right? It's all about the water, because water makes electricity, and you have to split the atoms. And if you think hemp's something, you should get into water, because we all think water's water. But once you really understand water, it's like, oh, my God. Oh, my giddy old. So, and I think that water is the activation for cannabis. That's what actually really activates it. And I think I've proven that. So, yeah, man, maybe we can link up on that project. Because if you're building, you might as well be building buildings that produce
electricity.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
not going to be very happy with the power companies.
The corporations aren't going to like us, Steve.
No, well, that's the problem with cannabis, is it? Nobody actually likes us.
We really do. I mean, we're the most peaceful bunch on the planet, but every time we go and do something, we upset so many people. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's time to upset them a little bit, Steve, because we really do, as a human race, have to embrace this plant again. It, you said, has been used through our history for thousands and thousands of years, and it was demonized and taken away from us and replaced with plastics and oil and nuclear power and all these great things that are having such a benefit to the planet. We now look at a planet that's on the verge of dying or could possibly die in the very near future. That's a scary thought, but we could change it. We really can. Of course we can.
At the moment, we're living on a dying earth. When just by planting this, we can live on a new earth. Mm. And nothing much changes for the average folk. They still got an house. They still from hemp rather than concrete, which is horrible. Huh? They still got some clothes, but they're made from hemp rather than cotton.
They're still driving a nice car. if I make some of my M-stone, it'll make its own energy. Who's that Tesla? Not Tesla. The other guy that's make, I can't remember his name now, makes the electric cars. Oh, what's it? Elon somebody.
Elon Musk.
Yeah, Elon Musk. I've got a battery for him, and he's an M block.
Well, free energy is a reality. It's just it hasn't. The public isn't aware of it, Steve. But to say
Absolutely, I mean, look, this is not the only way to make reality.
Well, yeah, no, I know it's a reality. I know it is, but to get the public to embrace it, and then get, of course, we got to get by the corporations and the control mechanisms that are controlling our lives to bring it forward. I mean, anything that's that positive for the human race, they're going to stop as much as they can because it represents a threat to their dollar, man.
Absolutely, that could be the only reason. Because you know, otherwise, everybody would embrace this. Kids understand it. Yeah. Small children understand cannabis so easily because it's not complicated.
Well, it was put on this planet for us to use, and it was taken away, and it's time to bring it back, Steve. If ever there was a time to bring it back in math, this would be the time. Hey, if anybody does want to call in, by the way, I usually try and do this at the beginning of the show, but you can call in on 269-409-1950.
Come and talk to me. I love talking to people.
Yeah, you can also get through on Steve's Skype at SuperBigBadMan1. We'd love to hear from you if you want to ask a question. If not, we'll just go forward. But yeah, we are making strides. This company in Calgary that I was talking about is they are actually now in a predicament because they are getting bombarded with orders. I was talking to Terry this week, and they're going to be hiring 12 additional staff in the next 2 weeks, and they're spending about another $4 million on equipment here in the next 2 to 3 weeks to keep up with the influx of orders they're now starting to get for these incredible building products. So,
Well, again, look, we're all pretty well informed about this plant, and most of us have been informed about it for quite a long time, and we all know that are honest that we're still learning because there's a lot more to come yet. But the joy of this is it's starting to take off worldwide now. Yeah, Turkey's just gone legal. Yeah? It's happening everywhere. So when it finally comes in, this is day one. It's not even day one yet. I would think it's the 1 minute past the new daytime. And it has done this much already. When we all embrace it, this world going to change around quick. I mean, medicine. We're going to change medicine, the face of medicine, forever. Mm. Once these people understand the endocannabinoid system and what the endocannabinoid system is, then we, like, just like X-ray, just like antibiotics, just like surgery, just like anesthesia, when these things came out, medicine had to move forward. It could not go backwards. And that's what's happening with cannabis in the medical world. It's totally changing the face of medicine. So we're going to live longer. We're going to live longer and fitter. Also, as well, I know people won't believe it, there's a few of us out there now that have been using this, not so much on the I've got nothing against RSO, by the way, and I've got nothing against the FECO and all that stuff, right, it's good stuff. But cellular regeneration, you need a combination of everything the plant has to offer. And I think it doesn't even matter what percentages they are. Because if it has the full package, and I'm living testimony to it, it actually causes regeneration. Your body will begin to regenerate, which means broken bones repair themselves, internal organs repair themselves, your hair gets... Well, I've had to go to the barber's today because I've started to grow a load of new hair, and all I had was on my bald patch was this big patch of, like, little baby hair. So we're going to live longer, we're going to live fitter. We're not going to die as what Dr. Robert Melameda calls age-related diseases, or basically just wearing out. If the body's not wearing out, if it's constantly in this thermodynamic homeostasis, which means totally imbalanced, as a cell breaks down, when our bodies are full of endocannabinoid or cannabidiol, or what I call the real full spectrum whole plant, then the body absolutely comes back to life again. And because it doesn't like being broken and old, it regenerates itself. It's a bit like Benjamin Button, yeah? Because he's got a DNA package. And this is science. This is proven science now. Yeah? Mm. As I say, I'm walking proof, and there's a few others out there that are walking around. Same, same. Yeah? Very confusing. Yeah?
So well, all I can say, all I can say is let's get it back here, man, because yeah. Our world is an awfully, awfully sick place now, Steve, and it's getting worse by the day. And, you know, myself, I've been using cannabis. We're allowed to grow it now in Canada, and I make a point every day. I have a salad every day, and I'm taking a couple leaves off my plants every day now and throw them into my salad.
Again, to me, that's full spectrum. You're getting the benefits of the whole plant. And when you're finished, we're going to dig a root up, dry her out in the sun, and then basically mash her up anyway.
Well, it's considered to be a superfood if we ingest it, Steve. I mean, it's right up there with the top superfoods in the world when ingested. So start eating cannabis, guys.
Only if you use the seed and the hemp seed oil. Then you have the full nutritional package. Eating green leaves on their own does not contain all of it. But if you hemp seed, then you got all the minerals, all the proteins, all the vitamins. If you use that in combination with the hemp seed oil, you've got the omega-3, the omega-6, the omega-9, which are the essential fatty body acids that the body needs but does not produce. And in our Western diets, oh, we are omega-3 deficient. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Once you combine the leaf, or the plant with the seed and with the oil, that is literally a food that you could live on forever. And you really
I'm going to live for a long time then, because I take oil in my diet every day. I eat hemp seeds in my diet every day. And now that I can have a plant in my house and not worry about them coming through the door and busting me, I have leaves in my diet every day. And I'll tell you, my body is feeling very good for my age.
Yeah, what age are you then? Come on, let's spit it out. I'm 62,
I'm 64. You know what, Steve? I'm playing.
You got 2 years of me.
I'm playing with the 20-year-olds in the rec league as a goalie, and I'm shutting these.
I know it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Most of my mates.
I'm not supposed to be doing that. I'm not supposed to be.
The old people can't put up with me.
The boys want to see my ID when I'm in the dressing room. You know?
I know. You can't blame them, really, can you?
But, you know, hey, Steve, I've also talked about Chaga many, 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 many times on my shows. And I've added Chaga. Unbelievable. Highest antioxidant, Steve, of any plant known to man. The Chinese used it for thousands of years. They kept it away from their people because they were finding it extended their lives. So they kept it away. That's history from the common people. And it's just now coming back to forefront in North America. The last 5 or 6 years, it's becoming extremely popular. I add that in my diet every day too, man. I drink my Chaga every morning. I go through my blueberries. I have my hemp seeds. Just the more you do for your body, guys, the better it feels. You know,
well, that's the joy of it as well. Now, in this new world that we're living in, because of the internet and transportations, before, to get access to something like a ginseng root, for instance, that came out of China, by the time it arrived to America, it must have cost a fortune because of the transportation. Yeah? Nowadays, they wave it on the old Chinese air, boom, 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 8 hours later, it's landing at London or New York Airport. Containers full of the stuff. So right at this minute, in this point in time, we have access to food groups, which can all be classed as superfoods, if you like, or natural living foods that we've never been able to access before unless we were super intelligent or super rich. Well, actually both, yeah?
You might be super intelligent, but if you had no money, you wouldn't have got no herb. So, yeah, you know, like there's so many good mushrooms, there's so many good... You can't knock any of them, can you? As long as they're grown properly, as long as they're looked after, and as long as they're processed correctly, then it's magic. I mean, most of these plants, we can grow them anyway, either hydroponically or in greenhouses, or even because we sort of know the temperate climates for them, we can manipulate them a little bit. Yeah.
Boy, I'll tell you, if the money spent on weapons was spent on cannabis research, this world would change in a year or two.
Yeah.
It would, Steve. Yeah. We're building weapons to kill ourselves.
You know it, man. Right. Yeah. Let's have a war. Let's have 1 year. Let's not spend no money. Let's not upgrade no military for a year. We'll spend all that money on him. And then we'll have a little comparison about who done what.
Well, if it was up to me, I would spend it on hemp. I would spend it on developing solar panels. I would be developing on free energy. I would cover the earth with industrial hemp. I would change all our building practices to building with hemp instead of wood, because we're running out of wood on the planet. Our planet is suffering from oxygen deprivation. That's a fact. I mean, we're
I live in Transylvania, which is the last natural forest of Europe. They're so sad. We got one forest left in Europe, which is an ancient forest and natural. And guess what? They're logging that.
Wow.
Well, they're shipping it out to Austria. They're selling it to Austria.
They're taking the rainforest down at an incredible rate. The lungs and the organisms that support our earth, we're killing. Very intelligent people, aren't we? Trees, yeah, those things that supply oxygen and, you know, that stuff that we breathe. You know, we know that plankton depletion is a
symbiotic relationship, same as them. They breathe in our shit, they breathe out good stuff. We breathe in their shit. Sorry, I wasn't aware of that. I used the STH word.
That's okay, in England, we get away with it because we sort of say it very fast.
Well, really, you know, Steve, I see all the negatives in the world right now, and then I get talking about this subject, and boy, it brings hope. It brings hope to me that people will actually get involved and start embracing this the way they need to, because they can really do miracles for the future. Our planet, you know and I know, Steve, is in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. I don't think we're really aware of the deaths. Well, I don't think most people are aware of them.
We come from totally different backgrounds. We come from totally different communities. But everybody that understands about M basically talks the same language. And I've been in a room where there were six languages being spoken, but we're all Ed people, and guess what? We all sort of understood each other. Because the subject matter does not change. The language might change, but the subject matter remains the same wherever you are. And what you just said is the language of the day. Now, we have hit that crossroads. We can go one way now. We can take the new earth, and obviously cannabis hemp in all its formats will be a massive player in that. Or we can carry on down, I'm going to say, the Theresa May route, because she's our prime minister, and I hate to throw Trump in, or any of these idiots, right? It's not just her and Trump, right? The people that are leading us to a Lenin's death.
Well, we're paying them to kill us.
Exactly.
I mean, we're paying them to kill this planet. I mean, it's absolute ludicrous what's going on in our world. We can change it. We really can. But we have to embrace this. We have to educate the public. And the good thing, like we said earlier, Steve, people are really starting to embrace it. World is starting to embrace it. But to me, I think we need to really, really accelerate it, because realistically, I don't know how much more time the old planet can take the abuse she's taking right now before she reaches the breaking point. And we could be getting close to that breaking point right now. I don't want to say we are, but we could be. And I think humans go before the planet, I think that's
the major concern, that a very large part of the population will start disappearing before the last tree does. I think that's going to be the kickback, and I think we have reached that time now. If we're not going to start looking after her, and we're not going to start looking after ourselves, then due to the pollution that's around us and the diseases that are out there and the treatments they're giving us, there's only one place they're going, is in that wooden box. And as you say, the trees are running out, so there won't be any boxes soon.
Take a drive in the forest and take a look at your trees, guys. Look at them. They're dying.
I drive the coastal forest.
Steve, I'm driving the coastal forest here, and I'm seeing it. I am seeing it in real time. Boy, I'll tell you, the forests are an indication of the health of the planet. And if we start seeing that, then we know we got major problems. And we do. But, of course, you're never going to get that exposed on mainstream, Steve. They're never going to give us viable options. They're going to give us Prozac, you know?
Yeah, that's the solution, isn't it?
Here, take this, and you won't have to worry about it, okay? You're depressed about your situation. You see the earth dying? Take this Prozac. You won't worry about a thing. My God.
Here's some Oxycontin as well, just in case you get a bit more panicky.
You know what, Steve? One of the studies I just did, and I've been trying to really – I spent a little bit of time this week looking at it, and I spent a couple – I think it was last week I spent a couple hours looking at its actual levels of crop production projected over the next 6 years on this planet. And I am seeing estimates of up to 50% to 60% crop production on this planet in the next 6 years. So if we thought about that for a second – you know what that represents, folks? You know, we're talking about mass starvation. We're seeing it now, Steve. Anywhere you look, you'll see reports of mass crop reductions. The planet's sick.
Right at the moment, there's 5.5 million children, UNICEF figures, by the way, UNICEF, not IPPI figures, UNICEF have said that there's 5.5 million children under the age of 3 that are dying of protein starvation on the planet right now, right this minute. Right, give me the job. I'll go and plant hemp seed everywhere, and within 90 days, they'll all have hemp seed to eat. Yeah. That's protein. That's simple. Yeah, bags of hemp seed, a little bit of knowledge, and then kids start eating again. And the thing is, that figure's not going down, these 5.5 million. It's going up. Mm. Apparently, there's about 3.5. We got a thing happening in the Yemen. It's the largest starvation since biblical times. I'm not going into the politics of why, because it don't matter the politics of why. The thing is, it's happening.
There shouldn't be a single starving person on this planet right now, Steve.
Oh, man, we should have reached that by 2019, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We shouldn't even be having this conversation right now, but unfortunately we are, and we know why, and we know why it's going on and who's behind it. It's a deep rabbit hole to go down. We don't have time to go down that one today, but we know going on.
We know, man. I was just like, we can carry on to spend our energy going down the rabbit hole all day long, but let's stay with the solutions. The solutions are out there. You've got to open your eyes, and we'll look around and go, oh my God, this is so horrible. I'm not in my bubble no more. And you will change. And as soon as you change, you will become positive, and then you will see the solutions. But the solutions have to be interacted or activated by us, because no government on this planet is going to. There is no politician, no government, no council, no senator. Nobody is going to interact with this.
Absolutely.
Only the people. This is a people's uprising. Don't forget what Bob Marley said. A movement of the people.
Yeah, you might want to take a look at France. You might want to take a look at France these days there, Steve. 2 billion of them on the street, 4 days ago?
No, you just get it on the news. The French are always like that. That's the French. We love them.
Stephen in chat here was saying that $39 billion would feed everybody in the world per year. You know,
no, he wouldn't even do that. I'll work out the number of how much hemp seed I need.
I'm talking about Steve Roberts, our producer, made that statement in chat here. It would cost
$39 billion. I'll tell you what, if you give me half of that, I'll feed the world, all right? Because just go and buy a load of hemp seed and get a blip, one of them Zeppelin planes. And go anywhere they need it,
and
just drop it.
If I was in charge, Steve, I would have planes flying all over this planet, spraying this planet with industrial hemp and
corn. Oh, no. I'll send you a link later.
Go ahead. I know what you're going to say.
You can't fly on a plane because it's aerotoxic. Basically, the air that's coming in through the jet engine, it mixes with the kerosene and benzene, the aviation fuel, and it leaks. And basically put filters up that don't actually work. So when you're on a long haul flight or a short haul flight,
we'll just you're breathing
carcinogenics.
We'll just put them in bombs and have them detonate about 1,000 feet off the ground. We'll work around that.
I'll get a blip. You remember Zeppelins, man? No, we've got Zeppelins. Zeppelin.
There you go.
Great, man. Nice and slow. No problem. Environmentally safe. Yeah. We make it out of them cloth like the old Heidenberg.
We'll get over those problems. I'll tell you. But boy, it's what we need to do right now, folks. And that might sound strange, but it's really what we need, because it can do so much for us, and we're ignoring it. We're not letting it do what it wants to do. And it wants to save the world, and it will if we embrace it, Steve. We're at a point now. We're educated people. We're supposed to be intelligent. We're supposed to understand that, you know, you can't shit in your backyard and not expect, and that's what we've been doing for the last 150 years since the onset of the Industrial Revolution on this planet. What have we done? We have done more damage to this planet. And we're all responsible, Steve. We're all responsible.
Absolutely. This is the joy responsible. But we can no good accrediting blame to somebody else, because you're your own boss now. Right from this minute, you're your own boss. You are responsible for what you do and how you treat this planet. There's no good blaming any your next door neighbour or the friend across the road, because the only person that can change this is you.
Mm. I agree.
And when you change, people will see the change and they go, well, he's looking nice. He's been going down the gym. He's looking really healthy. Oh, see, I don't know, man. My vision of it is the world is going to be so beautiful because it is a beautiful place. I've had the privilege to travel. I ain't going to say a lot of it because I've traveled enough of it to know how big it is, yeah? But I'm more privileged than most, man. I've been in a lot of places and I've been invited into a lot of different types of communities, mainly ganja growers and hemp growers and what have you. But why not? That's what I do, yeah? It's a beautiful earth, man. It's beautiful. And it is full of beautiful people too, by the way. They're not all ours, yeah? You know, the big percentage of the people on this planet are really heartfelt, they're really kind, they'll really help you out of any situation they possibly can, yeah? And it's a beautiful world, but we've just got to get away from this chemical toxic nightmare, yeah? It's a toxic desert.
We've got to get away from the evil people that are destroying this planet, period. And it's only a very, very small percentage of the population that's controlling
it. Yeah, a lot of it.
You know how many families own what? 70%? Eight families own 70% of the wealth on the planet. Come on, guys. You're free to go to work, pay your tax, shut up, watch your hockey game, drink your beer, and don't look over here.
Yeah. Look forward, soldier. Look forward.
Don't look up at the sky because we're not spraying anything up there.
No.
Yeah, God, I just read one report, Steve, that blew me away in the Shasta Mountains. Pristine snow. And three studies were done of the snow. And you know what the levels of aluminum were
in this? Oh, it's ridiculous.
60,000. Oh, by the way, I read three different reports, three different studies of the snowpack. 60,000 parts per million.
It's incredible.
Of nano-sized aluminum.
Yeah.
Okay, aluminum.
And, not only aluminum, it's got
that's
all these
astronomical, Steve. That's astronomical.
Yeah.
So where's it coming from, guys? And why do we need
it? I can't remember the name of it, but there's another chemical in there, which in the psychiatric industry used to be called the liquid cosh. Because when it's mixed with aluminium and this other thing, it makes a third thing, is a major tranquilizer. I just can't remember the name of it.
The compounds that they actually have patents for, I looked at some of the patents they actually have for these compounds they're spraying, and it contains aluminum, strontium, beryllium, and mercury was also in one of these patents I looked at.
Yeah.
These patents are in existence right now. You go to the
lithium. Lithium. Lithium is the one I'm looking for.
Lithium. That's the one.
Lithium is a tranquil. It's my elephant trank. So
lithium. It'll dumb you right down. So what's to stop them from spraying that one day? What if they all of a sudden want to just really screw us up one day and just load those planes up and spray? It's ludicrous that's going on in society that we have put a stop
to. Well, the joy of it is, by the way, I believe the Swedish government in the last 24 hours, the whole government thing has put their hands up and gone, this has got to stop, all right? So the Swedes, as a nation and as a government, as long as it ain't false news, I ain't had time to check it out yet. But I do believe that are the Swedes because, again, you know, like if you understand the Swedes, the Swedes. They know the truth. All right, whatever. So that's nice. A proper central recognised government is saying that. Wait. Yeah, enough's enough. Yeah,
it's enough.
You can't carry on down this road. Yeah.
Well,
as you say, it's ending up in the soil. I mean, I'm lucky. One of the reasons I grow in Transylvania, we don't have no jets in the sky. They're not spraying us as yet.
Well, if they're spraying it in the sky, Steve, it's ending up in our soil. It's ending up in our food.
Exactly.
Massive attack on our human health.
Absolutely.
People can't see it. Boy, you've got your head stuck in the sand.
But you won't know because you're on lithium. Major tranquilizer.
The fluoride has had its effect, the cumulative effect.
They drink some fluorinated water.
That was our subject. I just had a doctor on the first hour there, Steve. I don't know if you got a chance to listen to him or not.
No, I didn't. I wanted to because fluorination is one of my little... I love all that. I love fluorination. Well, I don't.
When you really look at it, Steve, it's all an orchestrated attack. It's all little pieces of puzzle that, you know, when you look at the piece by itself, doesn't mean much. When you start putting the pieces together, you start to see the picture.
Fluoride was Zyconon. Zyconon is what was invented, basically is what the Germans used.
It's like there isn't anything going on out there that doesn't seem to be detrimental to our health.
What does amaze me? What truly amazes me? We're being poisoned in the sky. We're being poisoned in the water. We're being poisoned on the TV. We're being poisoned on the media. We're being absolutely poisoned. Everywhere you go, we're being poisoned. But somehow or another, this human body is sort of surviving it.
Well,
how robust are we? Huh?
Yeah, and just imagine how much more robust we would be if we weren't being exposed to these things every day. Imagine how healthy and happy we'd be. We our society now, United States and Canada, are the sickest nations in the world, Steve, bar none. And
yet we spend I've been in the States, right? Yeah, look, no.
It's a fact. That's World Health Organization.
We are the sickest. Traveling around, again, it's back to that. There's no one worse than anybody else because it's all the same. It's just degrees, yeah? Okay? It's just, we all got to change. Because the way it's going, there's no future in it. It's as simple as that. Whereas the other future, I could end up living on a planet like Moses and still getting married and knocking out kids when I'm 300 years old.
The Bible says he lived to see his granddad, and they worked it out. That means he must have been about 300 years old, the dirty old bugger.
He must have been eating his hemp every day, my friend.
Drinking
his jug and eating his hemp. He knew what was good for him. Hey, listen, we're done for the last 4 minutes here, Steve. The hour's gone.
That went so fast. Oh, thank you for having on. I love talking to you. You're great, man. Yeah. Great.
Okay, listen.
I've got one shout out. He won't be listening, but my old buddy Casper Leach from the Time for Rent. Yeah, that was a nice little touch too. So if you are listening, Casper, still love you, still remember you. He's gone AWOL for a bit. But he bounced back. He's an old soldier. So that's it.
Anywhere people can find you, Steve, if they want to.
Facebook. I'm stuck on Facebook. That's it. Facebook, Stephen Child, thanks. I'll come up as number one. Can't miss me. Okay. Come and have a look at my pages. It's full of imp stuff.
Well, my friend, it has been an enjoyable hour. That went by really, really fast. I can't even believe the hour's already gone.
Yeah, when we started.
I didn't even get to some of the things I wanted to talk about. But when it comes to Cannabis Buddies, there is a million things we can discuss.
Talk for days.
Weeks and hours. We've got to do a marathon show one of these days and get every activist in the world calling. Kidding, buddy. Well,
if you ever make it into Europe, come and visit the Ent Farm down in Transylvania. Yeah? We do a live broadcast from there or something. Yeah?
Well, Steve, all I can say to you, my friend, is thanks for what you're doing and helping try to get this word out and the effect you're having on people and the work you're doing. Kudos to you, my friend. And we'll do this again in the very, very near future, I hope.
Anytime, brother. One love. Thanks to the producer, Steve. Right, hello, Steve. Steve's the producer. I'm Steve. He's Steve. Nice one, Steve. To all your lovely people listening in, just remember, it's about cannabis. If you know everything about it, just go and tell everybody that knows. It's no good talking to each other enough about it.
Amen.
Yeah, man.
Awesome having you in, my friend, and I look forward to a chat in the near future. Well, guys, those 2 hours went by really quick. Sometimes I feel like I should be on here for 4 hours because I really wanted to talk about a few other issues when it comes to cannabis with Steve, but we'll get at it again in the future, I promise.
Yeah. And the joy of it is, by that time, that something else would have changed, wouldn't it? There'd be new things to talk about.
Well, every day it's advancing and the movement's advancing. And
isn't it? Every day there's something new in the cannabis industry. I've been doing it for over 30 years, and even now things are happening. I'll go, that word I'm not allowed to say, it's like me.
Well, you've been very good with the F-bombs and everything else there, Steve. Yeah, well. And we'll do this again. Okay, guys, I'm out of here. It's been a blast. I really enjoyed my conversation with Steve, and thanks again to Dr. Bob Dixon, the first hour. Been a really enjoyable day today, and thanks for tuning in. And I will be back next time, same place, same time. God bless you all, and have a great week. Bye for now.